As I've mentioned each Sunday in this series is rooted in some of those wise sayings of Solomon, one of Israel's ancient kings, noted in the Bible and throughout history as one of the wisest men that ever lived. So the basis of our series is from one of his wise sayings that you would find in his book of wise sayings called Proverbs in the Old Testament. In chapter 4, verse 23, where it talks about this, it says, "Above all else, guard your heart, for it's the wellspring of life." A translation written just a few years later changes a little bit and says that it's everything that you do flows from your heart. So we've talked about the first few weeks that when we think about the heart, typically we think about that big organ in our chest that pounds and pumps the blood to all the other vital organs of our body to keep us alive and keep us well. And we're encouraged to take care of ourselves, to keep ourselves healthy, because if we don't, we end up our lives being destroyed. So when the Bible talks about the heart, it talks about the inner person, what's going on way, way, way down deep inside, the center of everything that we are. The center of our will, our understanding, our inclinations, our resolution, our determination, our conscience, our appetites, our emotions, passions, ambitions. So we talked about that idea that if there was a well that's fed by a spring, or we understand any kind of water source, if it gets something in it that's poison or toxic, then everything that it flows to, and everybody that is affected by it somehow could be poisoned. So if you read this verse from the Bible translation that I grew up as a kid reading from, the King James Version, it would say this. It would say, "Keep thy heart with all diligence." And the idea was that you would build a fortress, that you would put up a guard to protect it because it's so important that you wouldn't want anything to penetrate it that doesn't need to be there, that can cause it to be hurt or polluted. So from the outset of this series, we ask that maybe you might consider through this series that you would ask that question that David wrote about, that Shauna just sang about from Psalm 139. David, Solomon's dad, was a songwriter, and there's a lot of his writings that reflect on his own personal struggles in him trying to love God, to serve Him, and then his own worship and praise of God. But in Psalm 139, he says this to God. He says, "Search me, O God, and know my heart." And then he goes a step further, and he says, "Point out anything in me that offends you." And as I've mentioned through this series, typically, if you're bold enough to say that to God, He's not timid about pointing those things out. You'll know. Our lives are processed from our hearts. So things that happen along the journey of life can cause our hearts to be poisoned and cause us to become toxic. And the things that flow from us then can affect not only just ourselves, but other people. So in this series so far, we've talked about the poison of pride, and we've talked about the poison of lust. When we talked about pride, we found out that Solomon says about pride, he says that the Lord hates all those who have proud hearts. Now somebody asked me, does that mean that we shouldn't be proud of accomplishments and proud of our grandchildren, those kind of things? That's not what it's talking about. It's that thing that we're kind of stuck on ourselves, and that we don't recognize that we would humble ourselves before God and recognize that He really is all powerful, that we really aren't, and how desperately we need Him. Somebody said about pride this. They said it's the only disease known to man that makes everybody sick except the person that has it. I like that saying a lot. So last week we talked about the poison of lust. And John Piper gave us a great definition. He said, lust is a sexual desire that dishonors its object and disregards God. And then Dr. John MacArthur gave us this. He said, it's not the lustful looking that causes the sin in the heart. It's the sin in the heart that causes the lustful looking. The lustful looking is but the expression of a heart that's already immoral and adulterous. So this week we want to talk about the poison of greed. Oscar Wilde made a great observation. He said this. He said, there are many things that we would throw away if we were not afraid that others might pick them up. Several years ago, there's an American company that built a manufacturing and assembly plant in Panama. And it created opportunities for hundreds of people to work. But they had a terrible time keeping employees coming back once they got their first paycheck. Because when they received their first paycheck, it was more money than most of them had ever seen in their life. And they were completely satisfied. And they wouldn't come back to work. And so after several months of struggling for a solution for this ongoing problem, this company figured out what the solution was. They just gave all of their employees a Sears catalog. Some of you got it. Some of you didn't. Maybe some of you remember a couple years ago in April in 2013, a story broke about a resident in Liberty that was in huge trouble with the federal government. They had determined that there was this lady that had embezzled nearly $3 million from her employer to fund her gambling and lavish lifestyle. She had taken at least 8 cruises, spent more than $100,000 to pay for the cruises, the vacations, and the airlines. According to court documents, they had used the stolen money to purchase a 2007 Chevy Tahoe, a 2009 Honda Accord, a 1997 Crownline 20-foot boat, a 1997 Prestige boat trailer, a 1985 Chevrolet motorhome, a 2008 Jayco travel trailer, 4 Ameriprise brokerage accounts, 4 Kansas Speedway tickets, 4 Kansas City Chiefs club-level season tickets and parking passes, and memberships to the Chiefs Wolfpack Club. This woman's annual salary was $35,000. And her husband was unemployed for 4 years. And they listed no income for him for 2 years on their income tax, of which he claimed to be a computer programmer. In July of last year, another Northland woman was found that she'd embezzled almost $3 million from a sheet metal company that she'd worked for and caused them to completely go bankrupt. She spent more than $50,000 at Tiffel's Jewelers on the plaza, $400,000 on clothes and retail purchases, $59,000 for spa visits over 10 years, and used the money to pay off her own mortgage and decorate her basement and built a bar from which her husband built and spent over $18,000 to stock it with liquor. Andy Stanley in his book, Enemies of the Heart, says this about greed. Greed says, I owe me. Jesus said this. He says, watch out. Be on your guard against all kinds of greed. Life does not consist in an abundance of possessions. And you'd say, well, surely this doesn't apply to church people and religious people. Well, Jesus pointed it out to some very religious people one day when he said this to them. He says, what sorrow awaits you teachers of religious laws and you Pharisees, hypocrites, for you are so careful to clean the outside of the cup and the dish, but inside you are filthy, full of greed and self-indulgence. I want you to understand this morning that greed is not a financial issue. It is a heart issue. As I have mentioned throughout this series, I find from my own reading of the Bible that while we might be able to pretend and disguise our hearts from others, there's nothing that's hidden from God. You find in the Old Testament book of 1 Samuel reminded that God does not look at the things that people look at. People look at the outward appearance, but the Lord looks at the heart. from the Old Testament book of Jeremiah, chapter 17, verse 10. God says of himself, I search the heart. And here's what I would tell you this morning. Greed knows no socioeconomic boundaries. Greed resides in the heart of the rich and the poor. Greedy people are rarely at peace with others, and they're never at peace with themselves. Mahatma Gandhi said this. He says, there is a sufficiency in the world for man's need, but not for man's greed. And greed's hard to detect. And it's easy to hide from others and ourselves. But here's what you would discover about greedy people. They talk a lot about money and they worry a lot about money. They're not cheerful givers. They're reluctant to share. They're poor losers. They quibble over little bitty sums of money. I mean, have you ever had that person that gets you down right to the cent? They won't let you forget what they've done for you. They're not content with what they have. Solomon understood this. I mean, obviously he had an abundance, and you even read in his own journal about life under the sun, Ecclesiastes. He said, I sought everything. He said, there wasn't anything in my heart. He was rich, he was wealthy, he was wise. And he came up to the conclusion, it's all vanity, chasing the wind. He said this about greedy. In Proverbs 28:25, he says, the greedy stir up conflict. You ever notice that? The poison of greed will leave your heart empty, unfulfilled because of this. There will never, ever, ever be enough. And if the poison of greed is never detoxed from your heart, what I know is this, it flows to your children. You ever notice that? Greedy people have greedy children. And the poison of greed destroys families and relationships. And there's no time like that ever happens like at death. When people find out there might be some money, everybody comes out of the woodwork. And people are rude and horrible and mean and awful. Again, Solomon even says this in Proverbs 15:27. He says, greed brings grief to the whole family. Some of you would recognize the name H.L. Hunt. At one time, one of the richest men in the United States, worth probably $8 billion. In his lifetime, he set up trust to provide for his entire family. But in 2008, his first great-grandson, Albert G. Hill, the third, sued his grandmother and his uncle's trust funds, along with the primary asset, Hunt Petroleum, because he thought he wasn't getting enough. And eventually, he was disinherited. He alienated himself from his entire family, and in April of 2011, he and his wife were indicted on multiple felony counts of mortgage fraud. It was probably an inheritance probate issue that prompted Jesus to say these words in Luke chapter 12. Watch out. Be on guard against all kinds of greed. Because life does not consist in an abundance of possessions. Isn't it interesting that even in our culture today, our politicians play on this? As they talk about we need to spread the wealth around and so a certain group of people need to have what other people have worked hard for. They play at the greed of people's hearts. Luke chapter 12, as you open it up, the opening line, you find that Jesus is speaking to crowds of thousands of people. And notice what happens, what's going on with these people. In chapter 12, verse 1, they're trampling on one another. And one of the things that Jesus says to the people in chapter 12, verse 2, he says, there's nothing concealed that will not be disclosed or hidden that will not be made known. You can read on through chapter 12, but we're going to skip down to verse 13. Where Jesus is having a conversation, and he's interrupted by someone. He's not identified in the crowd, but he comes up and he says this to Jesus in verse 13. He says, "Tell my brother to divide the inheritance with me." It never really has occurred to me until recent years how much the Gospel of Luke, of the four Gospels that talk about Jesus' life, Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John, the Gospel of Luke, in that there's so much talk about money and wealth. There's so much, if you read through the Gospel of Luke, it talks about money and wealth. And what you have to understand is, the issue wasn't that the brother had been left out. He hadn't been left out of the will. It wasn't that he didn't get anything. He was just not happy with what he got. Under Old Testament law, the firstborn would have received 2/3 and the younger would have received 1/3. And what he's saying to Jesus is, a third wasn't enough. He wanted a half. And rabbis were often consulted to render legal decisions. And so what we're finding here is Jesus really understood and knew the condition of this man's heart. That he had in his heart the poison of greed. And it needed to be detoxed. And Jesus knew what was really at the center of this man's heart and his life was himself. And you find that Jesus says to him in verse 15, he says, "Watch out. Be on your guard against all kinds of greed, because life does not consist in the abundance, in an abundance of possessions." I encourage you to read a book called Counterfeit Gods by Tim Keller. He talks about greed and he says this. He says, "No one thinks of themselves as greedy. I cannot recall anyone ever coming to me and saying, 'I spent too much money on myself. I think my greedy lust for money is harming my family, my soul, and the people around me.' Greed hides itself from its victim." And Jesus said, life does not consist in abundance of possessions. A lot of people haven't figured that out yet. Sometimes people have to learn that the hard way. There's a lot of people that their entire identity and their self-worth is wrapped up in what they have and what they own. As you move on through this text, you find that Jesus tells the story. He tells this man, the crowd that had been trampling over each other, about this man that was a farmer. He was a rich man. He had produced this tremendous crop. And he begins to talk about to himself. And he says, "What can I do?" He didn't talk to God in this story. And often we fail to include God in our conversations and our thoughts, just like this man did. When we are blessed, we often think, "Well, lucky me." And some of you are thinking this morning, "Well, I'm not a farmer, so this probably doesn't apply to me." But I want you to think this morning as we move through this story, I want you to think about your job. And I want you to think about your income. And I want you to think about that bonus that maybe you get, or your overtime, or an inheritance that you got or maybe might get. Because often we're prone to think about our own comfort, recreation, bigger TV, bigger house, bigger car, bigger boat, you name it. Because you begin, I'm going to tell you the story from the paraphrase, The Message. It reads this way, it begins at verse 16, chapter 12, Luke. The man said, "My barn isn't big enough for this harvest. Here's what I'll do. I'll tear down my barns and build bigger ones. And then I'll gather in all my grain and goods, and I'll say to myself, Self? Ever anybody say that? I think that's kind of funny. Self? You've done well. You've got it made. Now you can retire. Take it easy and have the time of your life. Bigger, better, more. Did you know that 1 in 10 Americans have storage units for all their excess stuff? They just keep building them, don't they? Isn't it interesting that storage units, thrift stores, garage sales tell us something very important? There's a lot of stuff that we really can live without. Story takes this incredible turn. I mean, you don't see it coming. And Jesus, then God showed up and said in verse 20, "Fool." And when the term fool is used in the Bible, it refers to somebody that rejects God, rejects the precepts of God for the basis of their life. And it's interesting, it's a story about agriculture. Some of you may understand that a little more than I do. But the man never considers that God might have had anything to do with it, this bumper crop that he had. Because my observation from whatever farmers that I've had conversations with, they're always at the mercy of factors of which they have no control. In our story, this man never considers that the extra that he's been blessed with might have been intended for someone else, for somebody else's benefit. The question is never asked, "Lord, what should I do with the extra?" Have you ever asked God that? Let's practice that together this morning, okay? Let's all say it together. Ready? Lord, say it with me. What would you like me to do with the extra? Is that hard? Is that hard? Lord, what would you like me to do with the extra? That prayer will never, ever come from the heart or over the lips of those who are greedy. This story takes such a dramatic turn, tragic turn, because it says this. Just then God showed up and said, "Fool, tonight you die. And your barn full of goods, who gets it?" While this man in the story was thinking about the future, he didn't think far enough. He didn't think into eternity. Andy Stanley, in his book, Enemies of the Heart, says this. Says, in the end, he lost everything in this life and had nothing to show for the next. He didn't just lose his life, he lost everything he considered life. In the end, all of his possessions will be distributed to others, not because he was generous, but because he's dead. Eventually, everything we claim to own will be owned by someone else. Solomon said the same thing in his journal about life under the sun, Ecclesiastes chapter 2. Said this, "A person may labor with wisdom, knowledge, and skill, and then they must leave all that they own to another who has not toiled for it." Contentment is a hard thing for some people to find. Paul tells his young son in the faith, Timothy, in his letter to him, he says, "Godliness with contentment is great gain." And we all know this, but we don't live this way. We brought nothing into the world and we can take nothing out of it. But if we have food and clothing, we will be content with that. And he goes on and says to him, "Those who want to get rich fall into temptation and a trap, into many foolish and harmful desires that plunge people into ruin and destruction." Now I want you to understand, it's not money that's the root of all kinds of evil. And people say that all the time. It is the love of money that is the root of all kinds of evil. And some people, eager for money, have wandered from the faith, pierced themselves with many griefs. Jesus said it this way, Matthew chapter 6, "Where your treasure is, that's where your heart will be also." Our story concludes this way in Luke chapter 12, verse 21. It says that will happen to the man. That's what will happen when your barn is filled with self and not with God. We're left with the impression from this story that Jesus told that this man spent eternity separated from God and his stuff. So the question of the day is just this: what's your barn filled with? What's your barn filled with? Another occasion, Jesus posed the question in Matthew 16, what good will it be for someone to gain the whole world and yet forfeit their soul? Or what can anyone give in exchange for their soul? What possession today would be worth spending eternity separated from God? Can you think of one? What earthly possession would you be willing to sell your soul for? And what I find is, unfortunately, that there are people that will leave this life having traded eternity for junk. Jesus told us, again, in that same where we talked about where your heart is, where your treasure is in Matthew 6, in Matthew 6:33, told us to seek first the kingdom of God and His righteousness. And then all of these things will be added to you. Let me quote one more wise thing from Solomon. What he encouraged us to do is this, in Proverbs 3:9, honor the Lord with everything you own. Give Him the first and the best. So as I finish up this morning, let me pose some questions and I'll be done. Have you ever asked yourself questions like this? What's enough? Why don't I have enough? Why do I have to have more? Is there something that God wants me to do with the extra besides acquire something else for myself? What does my life and my stuff say about my real condition of my relationship with Jesus Christ? What does God get from you? The first and the best or the leftovers? Is God your first financial thought or just an afterthought? As I mentioned a minute ago, what I find in Luke's writings in the gospel is he talks a lot about money, about wealth. And maybe you'll remember from a story a few weeks ago, maybe months ago, we talked about a guy that had ripped people off and took money from him, Zacchaeus. And when he got right with Jesus Christ and his heart was changed, remember what happened, what he said in Luke chapter 19? He said, look, Lord, here and now, I give half of my possessions to the poor, and I've cheated anybody out of anything, I'll pay it back four times. There's a heart that's been changed. Paul tells the Ephesian followers of Jesus Christ in chapter 5 this. He says, follow God's example, therefore, as dearly loved children, and walk in the way of love, just as Christ loved us and gave himself up as a fragrant offering and sacrifice to God. But among you, there must not even be a hint, and he talks about sexual immorality or any kind of impurity or of greed, because these are improper for God's people. The only thing I know that will break the grip of greed in a person's heart is generosity. You might not be wealthy, and you think, I'm not rich, but what I know about this subject is this, that those who will not give from the little they have will certainly never give if they have more. If you're consuming to the point that you have little or nothing left to give, you're greedy. So let me finish with Jesus' words from Luke chapter 12. He says, watch out. Be on your guard against all kinds of greed.